All my riddles are answered in the movies.
That's a big Twinkie.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to GMC episode 16. I am David McVeigh.
I am Richard the Grey.
I'm David Longo.
Hello, guys. How are you? Dave.
Hello.
It's been weeks.
Hello. Yes. Who is this guy over here?
Are you sure it's been weeks?
It's been weeks. We were here last
week. Come on, you want to say it.
I was mentioned.
It's been a while.
It's been a while. I didn't do a punchy little, this is a podcast that does something, because I couldn't think of anything.
Because basically we haven't been doing anything.
No, exactly.
This is the podcast that does nothing.
This is the podcast that has seen far too few films this week.
Oh, we got a list for you, boy.
I know you do. I don't. All right, so this is GMC. This is the Geek Movie Club. This is the podcast where we kind of just rattle on for about an hour and see where it all comes out. Clubhouse is in session. All right. How you guys been?
Been pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, pretty good.
Now, you guys have been finishing off Sydney Film Festivals and stuff.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you've also been to a couple screenings, which I haven't been to because I've been working. But holidays are coming. Holidays are coming.
Those magical weeks.
And we'll throw out again that for those of you who don't listen to Behind the Panels, which you can find on behindthepanels.net or on the Geek Actually Superfeed, you will know that we're coming down to Oz Comic Con, David and I.
Oh, yeah.
We'll be down there basically between the 4th of July, because we're patriotic for another country, and the 7th of July, the Friday to the Monday. So we're going to be in Melbourne. We're organising some meetups and stuff like that.
And speaking of movies, are we seeing a movie
We're seeing it's a new film by this fresh young director named Ridley Scott.
He came from advertising, I believe.
He came from advertising. He's got this new sci-fi film.
He's doing
called
Prometheus, right?
Yeah, and it's debut actress, Sigourney something.
Yeah, actually, we're seeing the sequel to Prometheus.
Yes, yeah. It's called
Facehuggers.
It's from what I understand, I think I'm pronouncing this right, Alien. or it's possibly just Alien.
I think it might be just Alien, actually.
And apparently two of the hottest stars in the industry right now, Tom Skerritt and Veronica Cartwright, are going to be in the house talking about this. No, we're very excited to go into this. I've seen it on the big screen before. It's wonderful. It's so many times.
Yes.
Even now, like, I've seen it multiple times on the big screen. And Blu-ray, every format I've owned it. I can't wait to see this with two of the cast members there live. We want to organise a meet up with Melbourne folk or anybody else who's in town.
So if you are in Melbourne, Astor Theatre, Friday the
4th at 7 p.m. I think it is.
Get your tickets now. I think they're probably sold out by now.
The tickets are about $25, but man, it's gonna be a hell of
and
a
in
night.
In case you're listening to this 20 years from now, that's 2014.
2014. Yeah, so don't just turn up on a random Friday the 4th of July.
Yes, exactly. 2014. And yeah, we're looking forward to that greatly. So that's going to be the first
2014 AD. In case there's a catastrophe in 2 years' time, and then we start the renumbering.
We're in like the year one.
It wouldn't be the first time we renumbered our show.
And this has survived somehow another 2016 years. So just putting that out there.
Episode Marklack from
from year 201-Apple 4.
No, no, no. You know? 20XX.
20.
Stardate.
Klingons. Right. And you actually wearing
my Star Trek pin. My God, it's nice to be recording this show again. We did one last week, but it was much more of a formal show last week.
We were actually in tuxedos with martinis.
It was almost like that episode of television show where it goes, if you've been away, this is what you've missed.
And I walked up to you mean a bit of previously on.
Previously
see,
on.
See behind the panel. So we were in tuxes. I walked up to you at the start of the show and said, ah, David, welcome to Amsterdam. And
I'm still pushing that for the all British podcast. That we just do a geek movie club where we're just speaking in British accents for no reason. What have you been watching, sir?
I realise when I'm doing Sean Connery, I used to, and you got to do Sean Connery, you got to start with a real good trigger word like, Junior, and go from there. But when you start off with Sean Connery, go, ah, oh, Blofeld, welcome to Amsterdam. You realise you're about five shades away from...
Oh. I'm very disappointed. I was sitting there while you were talking. I had a whole soundboard set up of James Bond clips because we did a James Bond special at one point.
But of course you are.
Because I've moved it to this board. I haven't got them. I've got them all in my iTunes, but not here. And I have some wonderful Sean Connery clips.
My favorite one you've got was, I remember from the James Bond special we did, and it was just, Bitch.
Bitch. That's actually the one I was looking for.
Yeah.
That one, in. You seem to have blown your bolt, Strong.
Hey, what to say? Look, there's a lot of big news that came out this
there
week.
There has been.
Do you want to? I'm going to hit this button because I haven't hit it for like 3 years.
All right, let's do it.
Let's try this button.
Boy, there's a blast from the past.
Yeah, that was originally from the Behind the Panel show back when, I think, oh, it was after we'd renamed it from Between the Panels or something like
it was
that.
There was a little transition period. I think it was about episode 2 or 3 or 4, somewhere around there, where we kind of went, here's all these new intro themes.
And then we also had that other one. It was which we won't play because it blows out everyone's speakers.
But we thought we'd bring that over to here because we do movie news every week. So why not?
We've got, I mean, probably the biggest story. Undoubtedly is Star Wars.
I think it's the biggest story in everybody's
things. Poor old Hazza Ford. Harrison Ford.
Hazza.
Hazza. I like him to come out here and go, you Hazza Ford, Phil. poor Harrison's been in the wars. Star Wars.
Apparently he was attacked by a garage door.
I wanted that story to end with, apparently he was attacked by a gorilla on set.
Well, if you believe the British tabloids... The British tabloids would have you believe that the Millennium Falcon dropped on him.
I got a bad feeling about it.
I heard the real story was that the ceiling of the Millennium Falcon was coming down really slowly because Willie Scott was next door and she didn't pull the wire.
Oh, right, there's bugs everywhere.
Yeah, he's like, JJ, we are going to die. And then he crushed.
More energy. We are going to die.
I don't really mind if we die.
However, as it turned out, the actual story was that a garage door came down.
Way Harrison Ford tells him, garage door.
He doesn't talk like that.
No, he doesn't. That's the thing. But apparently it came out as like he'd sprained his ankle and all this sort of stuff. But it's actually come out that today, or the last couple of days, he's full on broken his leg. That's what's actually happened, which doesn't sound pleasant. I know
to ask, how fast was this garage door coming down?
He's not a spring chicken anymore.
He's Indiana Jones, man. Yeah, come on. He'll live. Did he grab his hat on the way out?
He survived and waved it as villagers were like throwing spears at him on the way through. I like to see that. It's like whenever Harrison Ford passes through a village, people just throw spears at him.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be good.
And they're going, no. It's not a tribute to Raiders of the Lost Ark. We just hate your fucking guts. that's for Crystal Skull, bitch.
There's a snake on the plane, Jack.
I hate snakes.
That's just my pet snake.
Garage doors. Why did it have to be garage doors?
So the question is, I mean, we're talking about Pinewood Studios, so we're talking about very big doors. That's a big door. We're talking about very big doors. This thing would have had some weight behind it. But the question is...
Why was he
under the door, and how fast did the door come down?
And was alcohol involved?
Yeah.
I guess it was one of those scenes, hey, where like stormtroopers are shooting
the garage door?
I don't think it's the garage door. I think it's the door of the Millennium Falcon, isn't
it? No, it was
said?
Actually a studio door. Apparently.
Oh, so it wasn't
the
actually
original
part of the set.
The tabloids originally reported that the hospital was airlifting a 70-something-year-old actor off of Pinewood set because the set of the Millennium Falcon had fallen on him. Yeah. Right? So literally the thing had collapsed on him and, you know, he was like dire. That's how they reported it. And at the very, very bottom of it, it was like, it could have been a garage door.
it's the ship that crushed the Harrison Ford in less than 12 passes.
Well, there you go. And the reputable news sources have come out. The reputable news sources have come out and basically said, no. One of the loading doors at Pinewood Studios came down on his leg and hurt him.
I got a feeling one thing's for sure, we're all going to be a lot thinner after.
I just had a feeling that's the last time I'm going to see her.
But yeah, what the hell is he doing under the garage door? Anyway,
there's
other Star Wars news, though.
There is other Star Wars news. A garage door has killed Ryan Johnson. and he won't be directing episodes 8 and 9, and I'm breathing a sigh of relief. No, Looper director Ryan Johnson has been announced, I think officially, as the director of...
There is video of him making this announcement too, so it is official.
Oh, have you got the video queued up?
I don't have the video queued up.
Well, what kind of a host are you?
Only found it 30 seconds before we started recording.
What kind of a bit and a half operation are we running here?
About a bit and a half.
We couldn't afford the whole 2 bits.
It was about
a
bit and a quarter, actually.
I wonder what he says in the conference.
He probably says, hey, bitches, I'm directing Star Wars.
Imagine if one of us got making an announcement that we're directing Star Wars, it'd just be, woo!
he announces the title for episode 7.
Apparently, actually, that is the news. Word on the street is that they will be announcing the title for episode 7 at Comic-Con this year.
Right.
No, well, they're only going to reveal the first letter of each word.
At every comic convention between now and December next year, they'll release one letter.
Now, let's
you only know what the title is when the film's actually screened.
Let's discuss this for a second, because you guys weren't huge fans of Looper, I believe.
Neither of us were we? No, I actually, in my review, and I have to look it up, but I said something like, it was a film that where a shark went back in time and jumped over itself. because the first half of it was good, and then there's a point where it's like, you know what? You just went there, didn't you? And I don't like where you went.
See, whereas I did. And
that's because you're a lesser human.
I am, and I'm a populist person, and you know, whatever. I don't know. Whatever you want to say. But I actually really enjoyed Looper. I thought Looper was a lot of fun. And I really like his two previous films. So I really like Brothers Bloom, and I really like Blake.
I really like Brothers Bloom and Blake. It's hard to say. I really like Brothers Bloom and Blake as well. Yeah. I do like his... Blake. Brothers Bloom, Blake, and Blooper. Yeah.
This is exciting because... He'll direct the shit out of episode 8, I'm sure.
Now, the question is this.
I want that. I don't care what happens in a couple of years' time when that film comes out. I want your review to read. Ryan Johnson directed the shit out of that.
Whether he'll write the shit out.
Well, the interesting... Is
he writing as well?
Yes, he is. Oh, okay. And this brings us to an interesting point. Lawrence Kasdan was originally hired to write episode 8. That was his original job. Because remember, Arndt was writing episode 7, right? Michael Arndt.
Michael Arndt was originally writing 7.
And Lawrence Kasdan was hired to write episode 8 like he wrote Empire Strikes Back.
Yes.
Then suddenly J.J. Abrams was hired. Michael Arndt's script was ditched. Lawrence Kasdan and J.J. Abrams wrote 7 together. Mm. The question is... Ryan Johnson has now been brought in. He's now been brought in to write and direct number 8 and 9. How much of Lawrence Kasdan's original 8 is still going to be there?
I wonder if they brought him in deliberately because from what we've heard is that JJ's taking forever with 7 and like whether there was plans to have JJ on the later ones, you know, to make it kind of his thing like he did with Star Trek. And will this mean that, you know, will he come back to doing other projects and what he'll do after that? Or maybe he's just like, he wants to do the first Star Wars and then just leave it.
Will he have some sort of production?
I think it'd be really cool if he took on the Lucas role. You know,
he'll take on with the Mission Impossible films. He continued on as producer.
Because it would then mirror the original trilogy exactly.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, and that's kind of upsets me because I was hoping for it would be like, let's not do this whole, let's plan out a trilogy. Mm. I like the idea of let's plan out one.
And then
we'll figure it out. Because that's what the original trilogy has.
That's why you end up getting, you know, by the third one, they have to go, well, that actually all works out from a certain point of view.
Yeah, because that's what makes it sound awesome.
Because you have that record.
Because it strikes me as weird that we're only, what, like 5 or 6 weeks into filming episode 7. We're already announcing.
And they've already lost a leg.
The next one after the leg break.
Because that's the thing. They've also announced like two of these standalone films that Josh Trank and Gareth Edwards are directing. I'm not a huge. I mean, look, two thoughts on that. One is that I'm kind of excited that they've got standalone films because the exciting thing about that means that you have films set in the Star Wars universe that aren't tied to the rest of the continuity. They can just do what they want with. And then maybe we'll get some really cool Star Wars stuff coming out of this. That's cool. Mm. The other part of me is like Star Wars, and I'm not a big expanded universe guy. I don't really read the books or the comics. I read the Timothy Zahn stuff.
Well, none of it's relevant now anyway.
But anyway, the legacy.
Yeah, but I'm saying none of
the Star Wars legacy stuff. Like, I'm not a huge fan of that. I've played some of the games. I like those. I like the first Star Wars Unleashed and all that kind of stuff. The second one was a bit pants. But, you know, to me, Star Wars is trilogies. You know, it's the big, and that's because Star Wars is epic.
Yeah.
Star Wars is not a standalone film. Star Wars is 3 films.
That being said, I actually saw the trailer on Foxtel the other night for Star Wars Rebels, which is the new
animated
series.
Actually, I saw this morning. Yeah.
It looks really good.
And that's set between 3 and 4, isn't it?
That is set between, is it 3 and 4?
Yeah, it's set between Sith and... I'm pretty sure it is.
No, isn't it set prior to 7?
No. After it's set 6? Between 6 and 7, I think.
Yeah.
No, because they're talking. I'm sure they're talking about. You sure? Because I thought they were talking about like the,
oh, no, if it's Rebels,
the rise of the
if
Rebels.
If it was Rebels, it would be set between 3 and 4.
I don't know.
I'll look this up while you
look
keep
it up
talking.
While you keep talking. Well,
yeah, so why you say that? I just want to say, like, I'm a massive Star Wars fan. They could just make anything, and I'll be happy. I'll be there going.
They could like, make a movie like, called The Phantom Menace, and you'd still watch it.
Hey, I still watch it all the
so
time.
You could, so they could make a movie.
This is Brad Racing.
They could make a movie of Harrison Ford dressed as Han Solo in hospital with a leg cast on, and you're there.
It's set between Sith and Episode 4 New Hope.
Right, there you go. Right.
But what I'm basically trying to say is that it's like, let's... Everything that they've done so far has seemed like the right thing to do. But it's I don't want them to get too cocky. You know what I mean?
And then, that's look, great, kid. Don't get cocky.
Yeah, I go, oh, that's a line from the movie.
Look, at this point, yes, just, I agree with you. At this you point, know, it's, it, they
let's
are,
do them right. Because that's what J.J. Abrams seemed to represent for this. Like,
we
let's
always
do it
knew
right.
there was going to be some spin-off films. I'm glad that it's only two. Because there was talk. Remember when they started just announcing spin-off after spin-off after spin-off after spin-off?
So. Two things we can guarantee. It's like... There's going to be a level of awesome to these films, and everybody will love them, and everybody will hate them.
Yes,
that's what we know for sure about these films.
Yeah, because there's no Star Wars fan in the world. There's not. You're never going to make a Star Wars film that is going to please every Star Wars fan in the world.
No,
as the original, as the
prequel
trilogy. As the prequel trilogy proved. Yeah. Right. There's going to be certain people who go, "This is fine," and I quite like this, and they're technically Marvels.
Sorry, did they make prequels?
And then there's going to be a whole bunch of people who sit there and go, "You destroyed and raped my
you
childhood.
You blew it up.
Yeah, you blew it up. You. Damn you all to hell.
You told me I was never going to get any more. And now I've got more. I don't want more. I've always dreamed of having more. I spent 30 years
now,
waiting Maddie, for more.
For giving me
and
more.
Now I don't want them.
Right? I mean, that's the thing at the end of the day. I mean, we want more Star Wars. We love Star Wars. Star Wars has been part of our geek DNA since 77. You know, it is, you know, I don't remember a time. I mean, literally, I mean, Dave and I won't remember a time before Star Wars. You know, Star Wars has always been there. Mm-hmm. It's always a huge part of us. When they announced the prequels, I was excited as everybody else.
Absolutely. Hell yeah.
I was disappointed with Phantom Menace. I was still on board for the other two because they got better.
Yeah.
And there was some very extremely cool stuff. I mean, I was there on my feet with everybody else when Yoda pulled out a lightsaber.
Damn
you know,
straight.
I was there. And like, you know, there was just that universal applause in the cinema when that stuff happened. Just you know, at any time there was a lightsaber. The first time a lightsaber was popped in Phantom Menace.
I mean, come on, the moment that Darth Maul pops that double lightsaber, everybody, I mean, there wasn't a clean pair of pants in the place.
No, it's like as if a million, you know, that sound you heard was like as a million geeks suddenly came and then suddenly had to sit in it, you know.
Yeah,
that's no moon.
no, look, I mean, that's the thing. The original trilogy, the prequel trilogy was filled with those kind of fanboyism.
Those
moments.
Yeah.
And we enjoyed it. I mean, look, so I can't say I'm not looking forward to it, but one, Dave, do you want to talk about your crazy crackpot theory?
We don't have to do this.
We don't. We let's move on. The other big story.
You know, there's members of the audience right now who are going, tell me, goddammit.
Should we just quickly?
Then? Very quickly. Come on, quickly. Okay.
Okay. What? I'll phrase it as a question. What if Queen Amidala didn't die when giving birth to the twins and she's revealed in the end?
Oh, that. Oh, fuck that.
Okay, so
Natalie Portman in age old makeup.
Potential spoilers.
potential spoilers.
Spoilers. Spoilers. No. The spoiler bit, to be fair, is that you said switch off now if you want to know nothing about the upcoming Star Wars films. There was a rumor.
And we should preface this by saying that we know nothing.
We know nothing. Yeah. But there was a rumor. But, you know, you mightn't want to hear any of these rumors floating around. You wouldn't want to go in cold. There was a rumor floating around that a big name actress was brought in under like a cloak for 3 days, filmed a scene, and then was taken out. So it's either someone recognizable where you'd go, oh, that's the character. You know, my bets are, hey, I reckon it was Mon Mothma. No, the only other woman other than Leia in the original series, right?
Just think it'd be the
Here's my theory. Yeah. It was Aunt Beru. She kind of she left out that those charred bodies weren't real, and Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru were still rattling around, and they're like Sith now.
Yeah, no, was a different aunt.
The blue milk went old, and it morphed into a.
She was off buying more blue milk.
But can you imagine?
And Uncle Owen and his mistress got fried, and Aunt Beru is still out there.
They have to have a big twist in the middle of the second one.
They were actually off down at Tashi Station picking up some bow converters. and hookers and blow.
What would be the biggest holy shit moment for me in the
Darth
Star
Vader
Wars movie.
Wasn't Luke Skywalker's father. Oh,
from a certain point of view.
He's actually your brother.
Darth Vader lied when he told you he was his father.
No, well, the Emperor might not have died. He could have just fallen really
far. We didn't
far
see the body.
Then,
yeah. Even though he fell down and then the Death Star blew
well,
up.
Well, that's true.
let's
anything
move on to some,
could happen.
Let's move on to some non-Star Wars movies. I already think that Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone are the best people in the world already, because we saw they recently did some stuff on Jimmy Fallon, which was brilliant. We played Andrew Stone singing the Spider-Man theme.
Forget Andrew Garfield, just Emma Stone.
Emma Stone, full stop. She did the lip-syncing thing, and it was phenomenal. She did the I Always Win thing, and she did Blues Traveler, which, you know, massive.
Do you know
the
nickname for them?
What's that?
Starfield.
Ah. Oh. Brilliant. Starfield.
Stone
yeah.
and Garfield.
Garfield.
Oh,
Starfield.
That's good. I like
that's
that.
Nice. I don't
that.
Take credit for that. I read
but
that.
The thing is, you know, a couple like that are constantly under the media gaze. And so they saw a bunch of paparazzi outside and they knew they were going to get their photos taken. So they decided to take advantage of this. And they held up little signs over their faces as they were walking out. And the Stone sign read, it's Stonefield, not Starfield.
Oh.
Good morning. We were eating and saw a group of guys with cameras outside and we thought, let's try this again. We don't need the attention, but these wonderful organizations do. And Starfield's note continued with the message by sharing websites to several charities, youthmentoring.org, autismspeaks.org, WWO.org and Gilders Club in New York's NYC.org before concluding, here's to the stuff that matters. Have a good day. And I think it's wonderful.
That's awesome.
You know? Because we always complain about celebrities who are just, you know, grabbing attention for the sake of grabbing attention. And, like, these are guys who know they're going to get attention because they're a star couple. You know, they've both been in, they were literally both in one of the biggest films of the year. Mm-hmm. They're both going to go off and do amazing things separately in their careers and possibly together again. You know, this is how you use your star power to affect good. You know, Jolie and Brad Pitt do stuff like that. They do
they adopt children.
They adopt children. But, you know, they do a lot of charity work. They do a lot of high-profile charity work. Angelina Jolie recently blasted Australia's stance on refugees quite
good.
Publicly, which they certainly should. The Liberal Party is had some abhorrent and antiquated policies around that. So, and we've been very clear about that before. If we're going to take one political stance on this, is that Tony Abbott is a douche and
double douche,
and a double douche on you, double dumbass on you, wasn't it? From Star Trek IV, the Voyage Home.
Correct.
So that I just wanted to highlight that story because I thought it was so much fun. Mm. I thought those guys were super cool.
I think it's fantastic.
Massive tip of the hat to them for that.
Can I just throw one in? It's not on our running list.
No, if it's not on the running list, we don't do it.
But it just came across this. Speaking of douchey world leaders,
yes.
Apparently North Korea has just denounced the Seth Rogen film, The Interview.
I wonder why.
So I just don't know.
Have renounced Seth Rogen.
all the haircuts in the movie weren't to standard.
Probably. Yeah. So I thought I'd just raise that and bring that up. We don't need to go into any more details. I think we know what North Korea's leadership is like, but I think of the fact that I can correlate North Korea and Abbott in the same sentence is actually a really good.
I think that's brilliant.
I think it's a really good move. So.
Oh, there's a buddy comedy.
Oh, yes.
Be like Perfect Strangers. It'd be like, you know,
should be Planes, Trains.
It would have been better. It would have been even better if his father was still alive, because then he could have been singing "I'm So Lonely."
No, Kim Jong Un arrives as like Cousin Balky. Yeah. You know, that's basically what I want to say.
Oh dear. Okay.
We're making this. This is our short film.
That's amazing.
We're going to hell for this one. All right, what's
Christopher
next?
Nolan.
Oh, Christopher Nolan. Now, we all know that Christopher Nolan's a diehard film user.
We all know that Christopher Nolan's a douche as well.
He's a douche too. No. Christopher Nolan is
Love you, Nolan.
A diehard film person. He refuses to embrace digital.
That's
he
right.
believes that it's all about film. And he is, in fact, completely all in shooting in IMAX.
If you saw, we're going to talk about the Sydney Film Festival in a minute, and a couple of years ago we saw that film Side by Side.
Yes,
which was a great documentary about that with his
In a recent article on Slash Film, actually, there was an article about the fact that he shot a vast percentage of Interstellar on IMAX cameras and wants it projected in film. Mm-hmm. Now, what the wrinkle in this is that a lot of IMAX projectors are going digital, mm-hmm. and they're now projecting in a lot of digital. So what they're doing is they're actually retrofitting up to 50 IMAX theaters so they can still show his film on film.
And this is not a small feat. All three of us, I think, I can't remember if it was all three of us, got taken on a tour through Sydney's IMAX, which is actually the world's biggest IMAX screen.
Question is, will we get a film printer?
Well, they still have it.
So
we're talking massive film reels here.
Yes.
Yeah. I did not realize when they're talking big.
Remember
film.
Remember that guy told us about how, because when we went there, I think Avatar was just come out. It had just come out, had it, or was it?
It no, had already been out. We were there out. When Mission Impossible.
Yeah, that's right. And then the manager took us up and said they were in the process of installing. Like these hooks that went onto the platters. Do you remember that?
To make bigger
platters. Yeah, because the film was so long that they needed.
Because when IMAX first came out, as you recall, it was limited to like 30-40 minute films.
It's 40 minutes, I think.
And now they're playing features there, but they're also paying, like, you know, and features are now like 3 hours long.
They've got these huge standalone platters that roll in the film. These
platters are
around.
Phenomenal. We're talking big, a lot of reels are sometimes, you know, like vertical. These are big, flat, horizontal
pizza platters
that look like the world's biggest table. That's got just got film on it.
And the film and comes off of it and goes through a pulley system around the room.
Around the room,
until it gets into the camera. So apparently there's about 900 900 IMAX theaters around the world. Only 50 are going to actually, or roughly 50 are going to show it on
film. We have the biggest one in Sydney.
We do.
We have
one of the biggest. One of the, we
they're always
the world,
touting
as
the world's biggest screen. It's a pretty damn big
screen. It's a big screen. So question is whether or not you're going to get a digital print or a film print, but Nolan or Pate, talk about having the clout to still be able to get that done.
I've never quite sort of agreed. Like a couple of years ago, you could have said, but digital at this point is now to a point where you can't tell the difference between film and digital. And like, you know, they've done, you know, Pepsi challenges on this shit. Mm. And, you know, you can't tell. I think he's being a little bit, you know, obstinate with it. But then again, working on a particular medium, any artist, That's their kind of right to do that.
I rewatched Red State this week, and that's shot on Reds. Yeah. And my God, that looks good. I mean, there is, at this point in time, almost no differentiation at final projection
I understand, digital and... The most recent one is the Dragon is in the red line of cameras, and that is now at a point where you can it's almost you have to pull back. You can pick up stuff. In low light, particularly low light stuff, you know, where it's almost like, oh, we have to like really be careful of this because now we're seeing stuff we don't want to see. But it's sort of gone the opposite direction now. It is better than film because you can do everything that you can do on film. If you want the grainy look, you can add that in post.
Absolutely.
God's sake.
The only thing, well, I mean, just look at any of Robert Rodriguez's films where he actually purposely messes them up,
digitally. Love or hate Rodriguez's films, he's using that medium to its like limits. He's doing what you're supposed to do with that film. You know, you look at Zodiac. Zodiac was the first film, I think, entirely shot, you know, edited and like the entire digital workflow, I think, was touted at the time. It looks like it's film because it's set in the 70s. He's given it that old grainy, and it looks like a film that was made in the 70s, you know? And I think, you know, that's, you've gotten to a point now, and it's like,
look, I think understand.
He's being precious, but that said, you know, you can't have a go at him for working on film because it's like going up to an artist and going, are you still working on canvas?
I can completely appreciate the fact that he still loves film, but I think there comes a point where you sit there and go, yeah, it's time to not be quite so precious. Is all it comes down to.
Exactly right.
Anyway, but I just thought that was very interesting. I thought it was intriguing that he has that kind of power. Mm.
Well, I think it's time we started talking about some of these films we've been watching, yeah? Mm-hmm. So I think I'm going to hit this button.
I'm watching you, Wazowski. Always watching.
Always.
Always.
Roz is watching you masturbate. Let's start with the Sydney Film Festival. I started talking about this last time we did GMC because I'd seen a couple at that point. But you went and saw how many films, Dave?
I think 18 was my 18 final
total. Oh, good Lord.
Yeah. Oh, you're well off my record.
I think it was over 5 days.
5 days? Yeah. I mean,
Some days we had four, some days only one.
Sydney Film Festival, the time of year where big film fans in Sydney sort of map out these amazing plans and go, yep, I'm going to see 35 films in 10 days. And then you actually have to do it. Mm. And if my experience is anything to go by, I had a mental breakdown, like a proper one, by the end of that. That was a couple of years ago. So I've never gone in quite as hard with the Sydney Film Festival. So my hat's off to you for doing it hard this year. I asked you for the show to give me a top five Sydney Film Festival films.
Well, these are all competition films I talked about, but I didn't see all of the competition. Right. I saw 8 films from the competition, which is pretty good considering it was 12. 2 days, 1 night.
2 days, 1 night. Yeah.
Which was
not to be confused with 2 Girls, 1 Cup.
No. Yeah. Well, we should start talking about 2 days. We should start talking about that then. 2 Days, 1 Night.
Okay.
2 Days, 1 Night. It's Marion Cotillard. She's the lead, and it's called 2 Days, 1 Night because it's
speaking of Christopher Nolan.
It's Friday night, and then the 2 weekend days.
Right.
That's that it takes place over, and so she's a social worker. And on the Friday night, she's told that there's going to be a vote Monday morning that all the staff are going to vote whether or not they'll take a bonus or she should lose her job. So the movie takes place over these 2 days where she has to go and visit each of the staff personally and try and convince them to vote for her on Monday morning. What's really interesting about the movie is like beyond like this very simple story, which is then told exceptionally well, is that Marion Cotillard gives one of the finest performances that I've seen in a long time.
Wow.
And it's a brutal, stark look at depression because her character suffers from depression. And this is what makes the task of visiting everybody a big toll. And it has interesting spins on depression in relationships and like social work and what like the community spirit means. And like ultimately it's a stunning, stunning film because the plot sounds like kind of basic, doesn't it?
Mm.
But yet it becomes one of the most complex, beautiful, moving things done. And that's an accomplishment.
That sounds great.
What else? One of the other films that I really liked was 20,000 Days on Earth, which is a...
This is a Nick Cave one.
It's a Nick Cave film, but it's a documentary unlike anything you've ever seen, I think. Because what they do is that they take a day in Nick Cave's life, but they fictionalize it. So it's everything that's happening is real, but it's filmed as if it were fiction. So they've taken these real scenarios but filmed them with real lights and like brought in people like Kylie Minogue and like all these other famous people like into the scenes, but they've shot them real. We're accompanied with Nick Cave like commentary and interviews, if that will. That I really liked because it's A, I'm a Nick Cave fan, and if you're a Nick Cave fan, you're really gonna like the film.
Then I'm sold.
Yeah, and then if you're a fan of documentaries and fiction, it's an interesting blend between the two. So those are like the runners-up, I guess. The best film of the festival for me was Boyhood. And I think, Richard, you've got
I've got a little clip from that. We'll just play a little bit of that right about now.
All right, don't worry about it.
Looks like you used the bumpers.
You don't want the bumpers. Life doesn't give you bumpers.
We have a new student joining us today.
Hey, dude. Welcome to the suck. So
let me go. Mom. I don't wanna be. Haven't you been drinking?
A little bit.
Oh. Hey. Everyone deserves a chance to
walk with. Who do you want to be, Mason? What do you want to do?
Okay, so Boyhood. Are you guys familiar with Boyhood?
Yeah, this is a Richard Linklater film.
This is a Richard Linklater film. It's a film, like, a mind-blowing accomplishment, actually, in the history of cinema.
Really?
It really is, because Richard Linklater has written this script, which is the childhood to young adulthood of a boy. And so what he's done is that he's... And that's the plot. It's that simple. It just follows this boy as he grows up and his parents have like a divorce and that's all it is, right? So simple. But the way that it's done is astounding.
Just the actual way he went around making it.
How he went around making it was 12 years ago, he wrote this script and then he cast Ethan Hawke, Patricia Arquette to play the parents and he cast his own daughter who's in the film as the sister and then this guy Ella Coltrane to play the boy. And they started it 12 years ago and every year they filmed a 10-minute short film of this script and then the movie plays. And it's remarkable because it starts with like needle drops of music from that time. All the technology is from that time and slowly over the movie, the color changes. You know, and like mobile phones become iPhones and, you know, brick computers become laptops. You know, and it's really, so fascinating.
What's really interesting about that is that this was actually something that Kubrick had positioned.
Really?
Going way back when he first started thinking about doing AI, there was actually talk about shooting the concept of a child growing up. This is before the final, what we got now. And the idea, and there was a lot of rumor and speculation that he had actually been doing it, but nobody's ever been able to prove it, was to actually film it over the course of the lifespan of an actual person. Mm. And he didn't do it, but it looks like Linklater did. So yeah. That's fantastic.
And the thing is, like, this thing could have gone either way.
Yeah.
You know, and it never feels like it's a short film after a short film after a short film. It perfectly blends through. But you get certain moments that really chill you to your bone. Like, you remember a song from 5 years ago, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's the year after. And you kind of live that life along with that boy in your own. It's a remarkable achievement. And in terms of winning the festival prize, Boyhood probably should have won. But 2 Days, One Night is a stunning film too.
Right.
I saw a bunch of other films like Locke, Frank, Night Moves, a bunch of these other films. But we have to talk about Snowpiercer.
And I've got another clip from that. Yep. I'll play Snowpiercer. That right now.
A circular railway that extends for 438,000 kilometres and completes one circle every year.
Passengers, as in the beginning, I belong to the front. You belong to the tail. Keep your...
Yeah, okay, Snowpiercer. Okay, so I said that Boyhood was the movie of the festival. This is the movie of the year.
Oh,
so
wow.
Far. And it's funny because my second favorite movie of the year is Captain America the Winter Soldier.
Uh-huh, and both have Chris Evans.
Both are led by Chris Evans. So the least you know about Snowpiercer, the better, because of its like surprising things. And I would avoid watching the trailer if you can, because not knowing what this train looks like is part of the excitement and enjoyment. So avoid the trailer if you can, or watch the first 5 minutes. But the concept is that everybody in the world has died. The only survivors are that are left on a train. But the train has a first class and a lower class system to it. So the people in the back decide that they're going to take the first class.
Oh,
and that's
okay.
That's all you have to know. The whole movie's on a train in a post-apocalyptic wasteland.
I do like a good post-apocalyptic film.
And this is a graphic...
Have you seen it, Richard?
No, it isn't, but it's based on a graphic novel. So I think we should do a crossover special 1 week where when the movie comes out in Australia properly, we'll read the book on panels and then do the film on GMC.
I'm there. We're in. Mm. We'll commit to that.
And so Roadshow's got it in Australia, so God knows when it'll be released.
Hopefully soon.
Probably probably in a 1 week in the Chevelle Cinema in Sydney.
But it's start reading now.
It's an insanely clever, insanely inventive, and just batshit insane film.
That had a lot of
walkouts during the festival.
I heard this,
And a lot of booze. Because it goes to really hard, dark territory in parts, and then it rapidly changes tone from like being really depressing to then being like a Hong Kong action movie on a train, and then... Hmm. You know, then all of a sudden it's a strange comedy. And I think your friend Nima was there at the screening.
Yes,
I was at, and we were talking a bit about that on Facebook.
Yeah.
And he had strong reactions to it too, like that I did. He thought it was phenomenal, but also made comment about how a lot of people might not be to their taste.
Mm. I like a divisive film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's probably all I got. I mean, we can talk about every film I saw, but we don't want to do that.
Well, Richard covered a few last week.
I've never talked that long on our podcast.
I know.
It's amazing.
I
apologize.
Well, I covered Hodorowski's Dune, which we both saw, and I spoke a bit about that last week, and that's just amazing.
That's why I didn't bring that up.
Yeah, it's an amazing inspirational film. Going back and listen to last GMC. I saw mostly documentaries, except for Timbuktu, which set in Africa, and it's interesting. It was a bit of a Khan darling this year, and I think it was a bit heavy-handed, unfortunately. But check it out, because that will get a release here. I mostly saw documentaries. One of the other documentaries I saw, and I am a massive, massive, massive fan of the band Pulp and Jarvis Cocker, and I saw them on their tour, I think it was last year or the year before when they came out. They basically played all of their album from the era that they basically reformed the band from the era of an album called Different Class, which has their most famous song, which is Common People, covered by William Shatner as well. and you'll hear a little bit of it in this clip here as well. It's a documentary that's not just about it's meant to be about Pulp doing their final show on their tour, presumably their final show ever in their hometown of Sheffield. So returning like conquering heroes. And the movie is just as much about the town of the city of Sheffield as it is about the band. And here's a little bit of a clip from that.
It took us a long time to get here.
It's what's going on in your head that really counts.
Thank you.
We'll be on stage and we'll be thinking, oh, this is the centre of the universe here. But, you know, there'll be people doing all sorts of things. Some people will be watching the telly. Some people will be going and scoring some drugs. Somebody will probably be giving birth. All these parallel stories are all going on.
It makes you think, what they say. And I like music that makes you think. Sculpture at St. Martin's College.
So that's, you'll probably know Common People from there. I mean, amazing music, and I have it on high rotation throughout my entire life. So Pulp is a band I love. The movie's great because, as I said, it is it's about a town, it's about music, it's about they talk about the fact that Pulp talk about sex in a way that nobody else has talked about sex. You know, everybody else is either about it's always like, we're going to make love all night, darling, or we're going to, you know, let's get it on. And that's, you know, the realities of no one makes love all night, you know, because, you know, the reality, he's all about the sticky moments in between, the awkwardness of getting undressed. You know, there's one of my favorite Pulp songs is Underwear, where it's, you know, soon he'll see you in your underwear, you know, and it's, how the hell did you get here semi-naked in somebody else's room? You know, if fashion is your trade, when you're naked, I guess you must be unemployed. You know, lyrics like that. And he's very, very much about the words, you know, and his song, there's another one, I think it's Babies, it's the song where he talks about, you know, there's a story about him growing up and hiding in his sister's cupboard and seeing, you know, and all this sort of stuff and seeing what was going on. And there's the most famous Dark song about sex, about porn, but also about the music industry is This Is Hardcore. You know, it has the refrain in there, that goes in there and that goes in there and that goes in there and then it's over. And what the hell do you do for an encore? You know, and it's like, I mean, this is, I love the thing. Jarvis is great to listen to. I could listen to him all day talking. The only criticism I'd make is that you don't see enough of the full songs in the thing, with the exception of This Is Hardcore. And that's a frustration I've had with so many concert documentaries. They'll play like 10 seconds of a song and then just go off and do an interview. So that was a bit frustrating. But the people they interviewed weren't just the band. They interviewed people of Sheffield, the people, you know, who were touched by the music. And it actually ends up being a really fun little documentary. And it's as much about the fans as it is about the band. The other documentary I saw, and I won't play a clip from it because it's all in Japanese, is The Kingdom of Dreams and Madness, which is the documentary about Studio Ghibli, who of course did Spirited Away and My Neighbor Totoro and all that sort of stuff. This is basically around the making of two films. Miyazaki's last film, The Wind Rises, which I spoke about a while ago on GMC, and I didn't enjoy it that much, but watching Miyazaki's, you know, almost dictatorial way of working, the way he brings it together, what it meant to him, the way he does makes a film from the start, doesn't do a script in a traditional sense. He storyboards out the whole thing. People start starting to animate his storyboards, and there'll be a moment halfway through the production where he'll finish the storyboards. So nobody knows how this film's going to finish, including him, until they're halfway through the animation. It's a phenomenal way of working. They look at the point where they actually ended up trying to work out what kind of voice they needed for the lead actor. Because I said, yeah, intellectuals in those days had much higher voices. And so they ended up getting Hideaki Anno, who is the guy that directed all the Neon Genesis Evangelion films. He's a legend in his own right, just because of his voice. And you actually see it. It's footage of him on camera talking, which is kind of rare in and of itself. So that's sort of fascinating. You get to really see how a Studio Ghibli film comes together, which is fantastic. Simultaneously, the world's slowest director, Isaiah Takahata, is working on The Tale of Princess Kaguya, which is a traditional Japanese story, which I watched immediately afterwards, which was great to see that back to back. And that is a completely different animation style to your normal Ghibli film. It is it's a lot more adult in a lot of ways. It's very folklore based, but it's about this girl who grows up who was born these simple woodcutters, and they find a baby is born out of a bamboo shoot, And it's kind of like the, you know, nature's given them this baby out of a bamboo shoot. But then they're convinced that she has to be a princess. So they give her everything that she needs to be a princess and actually build her up to the point where she is, got all the riches. They build a massive house and she is a princess and they're training her to be a princess. And she's not happy with her life. She realized, you know, all she really wanted was, you know, the simple things, you know, and that kind of folk sort of lore tale. But it is a beautiful film. It's very different to every other Studio Ghibli film. I really, very, very measured pace though. Very, very slow pace sort of film. Beautiful to watch. So that is definitely getting released. Madman, of course, I've got that one. Both of those films, I think. Madman will be releasing later this year or very early next year. Except they've got to do an English dub for these things, for the dual. They usually release the subtitled and the English dub.
Yeah, well, so what is the story with it? Do they release the subtitles in like the art houses and then and mainstream out the dub version?
And usually it's the American dub version. I think lately they've been doing a UK and a US dub version, but it's usually the US dub version because I think Disney does the dubbed version because I think Disney has the US
when
rights.
Ponyo came out, they had the big cast.
Yes. Yeah, because it's Disney and, yeah, Disney does get some massive names for that because John Lasseter was always like the champion of Ghibli in America. And likewise, Miyazaki sort of is a huge fan of John Lasseter's Pixar films because there's a little bit of synchronicity between what they did. They're both smaller studios who were kind of fighting against the bigger ones initially and they both came out with a very, very particular way of working but a very family-based atmosphere. Studio Ghibli looks like nothing else in Japan. The very laid-back kind of work ethic in some ways, like laid-back in the sense that it seems like a fun place to work, but they work bloody hard, you know. So because the Japanese work ethic seems to be like you're up at the crack of dawn, you work till 11 p.m. because you don't want to be the last person out of the office, and then you're up at the crack of dawn the next morning. People, it's not unheard of. People work 18, 19 hours a day, every day. You know, that's a standard work in Japan.
Healthy, though.
Not healthy, but it's a fascinating look at this little microcosm within the middle of Japanese culture, one, but also how all these wonderful movies. You get a little bit of a potted history of Ghibli in there as well. So really, really recommend that because that'll both come out. Do we have time, before we talk about a big fun comedy that Dave and I saw, do we have time to talk a little bit about some TV?
Yeah, let's just throw a little bit of TV in there. Netflix premiered early beginning of June, Orange is the New Black, season 2. It won't come out in Australia until later in the year. Mm-hmm. But if you do have a Netflix account, and I know a lot of people do, you can actually guts out on the entire series now because in typical Netflix fashion, they've thrown the entire thing up in one go. So if you haven't got a Netflix account, bear with it. It will come soon. Showcase is showing it here.
I think season 1 of Orange is New Black only just came out.
It's
finished.
It's actually going through
the DVD.
The DVD just came out. It's been on repeat, constant repeat on Showcase for a while now. So
I think
what I would like to know is why quickly, didn't it come out on Blu-ray?
Yeah, this is interesting. House of Cards too.
Oh, did that not come out on Blu-ray either?
I'm not sure, but I know that season 2 just came out.
Yeah.
And that was a really quick turnaround for Netflix because it's only been like two months.
That's because of Kevin Spacey.
Sure, but I'm still wondering where Arrested Development is.
That's a good point. That's a very good
point.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure what that is. I want to know why Orange is the New Black didn't get a Blu-ray release. It only got DVD release, which is odd.
Yeah.
Season 2 starts pretty strong. We won't go into great detail because it hasn't aired here yet. No. But let's just say that it's back in a big bad way.
I finished it in a few days.
I haven't finished the whole season yet. But
it does end really strong.
Oh, it does? Yeah. No, I'd say it's a great show. If you haven't seen it, grab season 1 on DVD and watch that before you do season 2, by all means, because it's a really good series. Game of Thrones finished. I'm not up to date, but Richard, tell me.
Game of Thrones...
without spoilers, because there are people who haven't seen it
yet. You might recall... Yeah, so look, these are the characters that die. all of them. There are certainly...
We will tell you the characters who are still alive.
It's a short list. There are certainly... Obviously, it's Game of Thrones, there are deaths. But the... you might recall me going into the season 4 not that optimistic because I was kind of over it a little bit. But this has been, and while kind of long-term fans have sort of had the opposite reaction to me, they're going, yeah, it was a scattered season and, you know, it took time for everything. I actually really liked the way the season pulled together for me.
Well, apparently it's actually strayed quite far from the book now too.
Yeah.
It's steered off in its own
direction. It's its own thing. Yeah. So I think that's good in a way. It means I can start reading the books because I won't necessarily have the spoilers. Mm. And that's the thing. I mean, do you know there's this guy who's writing spoilers for the TV show?
Yeah.
He's written big volumes of them, yeah. it's George R. R. Martin. He's been writing volumes of spoilers, yeah. Dave looked confused. but it was...
Because I'm halfway through the second book.
There's been some major, you know, holy shit moments all throughout the season. There's definitely a couple, quite literally, in the final episode. Season 10. Season 4. I really enjoyed it. One of the things that George R. R. Martin, not to be confused with the Beatles producer, has said is that he'd like to see it go, and he's one of the producers, he'd like to see it go to a 13-episode season rather than 10 episodes.
He's also pushing for a film,
because he thinks that there are...
Is he really?
That because... He said some stories have to be too compressed to fit into a 10-episode season. I understand, like, HBO kind of do shorter seasons, although they have been doing
13 episodes. Is not unusual.
It's not a long set, yeah. But I imagine because they're filming on four continents, because they're doing these, I mean, the sets
the series
are amazing.
Is incredibly expensive.
Very expensive. It's probably one of the most expensive shows on television. So making it longer would make it more expensive. It's not like they're not getting the numbers, though. So
can we also point out, this is something we should mention here as well. In Australia, Game of Thrones actually set a new record as the most downloaded television show in history.
Pirated download. The reason for this, and actually it's interesting. I mean, look, I've got my opinions on this. I don't think anything justifies piracy because, look, there are with patience, there are legal ways of getting this, okay? Though Choice, the Australian consumer watchdog, recently came out and said that a lot of the reason is because Foxtel, which is the pay subscription service that it's being screened on here in Australia, is running on an outdated model. And it is kind of quote unquote forcing people into doing this. And nothing forces you to pirate. Okay, let's be clear about that. Nothing, you know, no one's holding a gun to your head. Yeah, you know, if you want to avoid spoilers on the day, I mean, just don't turn on the fucking internet the day that, you know, don't get onto Facebook the day that a Game of Thrones episode. I know that I can't look at social media between.
Or if you're a Game of Thrones fan, don't get on Facebook three years after it's aired, because that's how I got.
Well, that's the thing is, I mean, like, you have to accept. Well, I saw you post that, and I kind of thought for a second. Come on, dude. You know, you got to accept. I know you're just getting into it. I'm not having a go at you, but I'm saying you got to accept that if you're just getting into something or something's just aired, people are going to be spoiling the shit out of it.
It's like
when the Oscars are on. I know not to turn on a computer between this time and this time. I know what I'm getting into, right? And it has been spoiled for me several times in the last couple of years. So, David, your policy on you don't care as much about spoilers as I do. I like that gut reaction you have when you see something.
Like, shit, man, I'm like walking out of the trailer.
I mean, when we'll talk about 22 Jump Street in a minute, because that was a thing where I actually tried to avoid the trailers because they tend to show every joke in those things. And that was certainly the case, I think I mentioned.
But look, can I just be clear as well?
Just
because it's like I agree, like maybe I'd say 90% of it is my responsibility to avoid spoilers. I take that on as my own, which hence why I'm trying to race through
on,
the books. And,
it's not on.
Yeah, because the thing is, like, it fucking sucks because, hey, I'm expected now to be able to read five really long books in the span of what, a week until the next episode. So I'm caught up.
You've got
today.
Until March next year.
Yeah, now I do. So like I'll take that because it's my responsibility. I should be watching it when it airs. I should be watching it with everybody else.
Is you can't.
Yeah, and the thing is I can't. I get it. Whatever. It's my fault. But I will not like use that as a reason to say that there aren't a few fucking dickheads out there.
No, there are dickheads
because I want to explain how I was blown Game of Thrones, right? I wasn't blown with, I can't believe last night so-and-so died. I saw it. It was an image made in Microsoft Paint where it had all these gravestones.
Right.
And everybody that had died up to date. And then in the final corner was like a caricature of George R. R. Martin etching in the latest two.
Right.
And once you see that, you can't unsee that.
Mm. No, but it's the same thing. It's like everyone has complaints,
and
right?
Fair enough, my fault.
You know, but it's like everyone has complaints though, because people who are only watching the TV series and not reading the books are complaining like, you told me the spoiler about, you know, what's going to come up. It's like, you know, and people respond to that with going, we'll just read the fucking books. And then the people who read the books get really smug about it going, well, I knew all about that already.
Yeah, and I hate that shit
too. And I hate that as well because that's the thing. You know, everyone comes to these things from different levels. And
the thing about Game of Thrones that fucking bugs me, man, like to the nth degree is that everyone's like, oh, I can't believe you died. 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 I get it. You know what else? It's an incredibly well-written book. Incredibly well-written. Mm. And then the show is amazing.
Yeah.
And it's like, just get over the fact that people die and like, why don't you spend your time like trying to sell it to other people that haven't watched it or talk about what's good about it as opposed to like, oh, flopping your dick out like an idiot and going, oh, isn't it so big?
I've got to admit though, there was one death this season which just the way it happened, everyone was like, holy fuck sticks.
Yeah.
You know, that was just, you know, it was, I don't think we've used the word fuck sticks on the show.
Fuck sticks is good. Well, we should mention very quickly that, Louis C.K. actually came out in comment on Australia's piracy habits, basically saying that he came to visit Australia at one point and somebody said, yeah, we really love your show. His assumption immediately was that they were talking about older episodes because all the new stuff hasn't actually aired in Australia yet. And no, they were actually referring to very recent stuff. It then occurred to him that Australians want to buy all of this media. He said, Australians have got their credit cards in their hands saying, charge me, I'm ready to pay for it.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to sell it to them. So the Australian attitude is, well, fuck you, I'm going to download it anyway. The Australians are ready to pay for it.
The thing is, like, there are shows which I have seen outside of the legitimate screening schedule, that's if I can say that without being hauled away in a black van. And then I've gone and bought the whole first season of Blu-ray. They have got my money. I've paid for it as much as I can.
Absolutely.
Because free-to-air, you're not paying beyond the fact that you're watching advertising, which is your way of paying to watch a show. I was with S.H.I.E.L.D. all the way. I was watching it on Channel 7, fast-forwarding through the ads, which I think is technically illegal. I was watching it on Channel 7 because I wanted to support the Channel 7 broadcast of that show because they were doing it, fast-tracking it from the US, and kudos to them for starting it. But then they fucked it up. And they stopped screening it in time, and then they took a break, and they took a longer break, and then they were behind, and then they didn't really get back on track with it. And I think they stopped showing it altogether at one point.
Yeah.
Arrow, who knows what Channel 9's done with that. I don't think they've started the second season.
I don't think they have either.
I think they've given up on that. That's the problem. You're right. I think that caps it. Louis C.K. has capped it perfectly. Like, we want to pay for it. I am happy to pay for it. I'm happy to get it legitimately.
Give it to us. Give it to us.
I have got my... I am a geek. I have bought Stranger Things.
Statistics actually show that Australians pay more for media than any country
in the
world.
I am a cable subscriber. I am paying for television right now. That is why I'm watching Game of Thrones within 2 hours of the US.
Say, for example, if you're an Australian fan of Arrested Development, right, and you say you've watched season four, you're admitting to piracy.
Well, not necessarily, because you can have the gray area, which is you may have a Netflix account.
Yeah, and you're admitting to gray area.
Because, yeah, you're admitting to the gray area. Because I know a lot of people who have Netflix accounts.
There's no legal way to own Arrested Development season four. And it's been
two years. I think next month it's coming out on Blu-ray, on DVD. I think it is actually coming out here. So
May, finally. Because I can't wait to buy it and watch it.
Can I say, I haven't watched it because I kept thinking the DVD was coming out. Yeah, and I just wanted to watch it, you know.
Interestingly enough.
A movie in two more seasons.
But other stuff. At the moment, I'm shotgunning all of Archer. Borrowing Archer from a friend, and I got to a point. She said, "You have to watch and be familiar with Bob's Burgers to kind of get some of the gags in the next season." I'm like, "Right, I'll go out and buy Bob's Burgers." She didn't have it. No season of Bob's Burgers is available in Australia to buy at all.
No.
Why? Why is it? They're screening the current season on Foxtel, but no single episode is available to buy.
It's because
they're all available on the stage.
Because we're stuck in this never world of like what's financially good for companies to put DVDs out here. Yeah. And then
we've gone back. Like,
what the internet thing has done.
We've gone back because we used to actually, for a time, we were getting really good at getting stuff out here day and date with the US release. This is back to the early days of DVD where there was this massive discrepancy between what the US was getting, even in terms of features. Remember when Avengers came out?
Yeah.
We got the DVD early, but got none of the bonus features.
Here's the last point on this, and then we can move on to your film review, because we are running out of time here.
Ah, hell with that.
But here's the interesting part.
We can go for an hour and a half.
There was an interesting article written about the entire Game of Thrones thing, because Game of Thrones being a record downloader and so forth. HBO had comment to make on it, and HBO actually said, yeah, we're quite honored by that. HBO, apparently, people who blame HBO all the time for these things not being available, it is not HBO's fault.
No.
HBO wants it out everywhere. HBO wants it on every device.
And
HBO,
they make it.
They make it. They want it out there. They want everyone to see it, right? It's the cable companies that are actually the guards here. And the cable companies have HBO by the balls, basically, because of the way that the contracts and deals are made.
Mm.
HBO Go, the app that they have in America where you can actually watch HBO programming on your iPad, you have to have a cable subscription before you
can actually
use it.
It's the same as Foxtel Go here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So basically, they have their balls in a ringer when it comes to the way that these cable companies are actually releasing. The HBO rep actually said, "We are quite honored the fact that everybody is downloading our show because then people are seeing it."
Mm. Yeah.
And as far as they're concerned, good luck to you.
Yeah.
You
look,
know?
Something has to change. I mean, the thing is, something has to change in terms of Australia. I mean, once you've identified that there is a problem, we're doing something illegal. It's kind of like, you know, decriminalizing marijuana.
Yeah.
You know, once you've identified that people are going to do this regardless, assess whether or not what the community, you know, the cost benefit harm analysis of the thing. You sort of determine there are a lot of benefits to having this freely available. There are, you know, benefits to the community and whatnot. Let's look at another model. That's what we're asking for. We're not asking because there's this
I'll tell you what,
weird
the
sense
is.
Of internet entitlement. Sorry. You know, yeah. Like someone's made it. I deserve to get it for free.
Correct.
I don't believe that. No, I deserve that the copyright owners
and
need
I am
to get,
ready to pay for all of
the copyright owners and the creators need to be paid for their shitload of hard work. You know, and as I'm standing here, cock and credit card in hand, ready to go.
I purchased the iTunes release of all of the previous seasons of Game of Thrones as they were being aired. I bought the Blu-rays when they came out. And as soon as this latest season was on, I got onto iTunes and went ready to pre-order the season. And it wasn't available.
Can I just say, I don't actually know how I'm going to watch this show because I've got my cock in one hand, a credit card in the other. Who's holding the remote?
I was just going to say, a good model for Australia would be to make some of their own content that doesn't suck, you know?
Yeah.
Because like I think a big part of the problem is that all we watch is American content because that's all it's good.
And English content.
And so we end up ripping it all off because we have nothing else to watch
actually,
in the
that's
meantime.
That's a really good point. Actually, you know? Someone was making a comment about this to the Australian comics industry as well,
like,
saying...
You know, sorry, just really quickly. For me, it wouldn't be a problem waiting another year to watch a show if I had like 10 other Australian shows to watch.
Exactly right. Like, and this is the time. During this mid-season break, it'd be great. Because it's just that whole... Let's face it. I mean, look, you know, this is unfair because it's a general comment. But a lot of Australian content, comics,
just films, doesn't cut it.
It does not cut it. It's not cutting it on an international market. And there's no reason it shouldn't.
But in
because we have talented people
and
here.
But in particular, let's be very frank, a lot of Australian television, I'm not saying everything, but a lot of Australian, the vast majority of Australian television blows.
Yeah.
Our television is not good.
You get clever things every now and then, like Rake or Wilfred or something like
every
that, which actually get picked up by the US. Like Wilfred got remade in the US.
One of the funniest things I ever saw, and I'm going to admit to something here, which I shouldn't admit to, but I was actually looking at a torrent site one day, and there was a comment section under it, though. This is why I want to bring this up, because on this torrent site doesn't exist anymore, by the way, so we should be clear about that. But on this torrent site that was there, there was all the latest American TV shows, and then somebody had posted up All Saints, which is an Australian show. And the first comment on the list was obviously somebody from overseas who just went, "What the fuck is this shit?"
Said the review to every Australian show ever.
Exactly. And it was like, first of all, I was amazed to see an Australian show on here. You don't see Australian shows torrented.
How many Australian shows do you see on DVD that aren't called Offspring?
Actually, I should say that. To shout out to the Purcell brothers who do Winter City Comics. Mm. And they were recently saying, "Well, I just found our comics on a torrent site. Should I be flattered or not?" And most people were saying, actually, yeah, you should be really flattered because most Australian stuff doesn't cut through the noise to start with. Second of all, watch your sales increase now. And they said, it's actually, there's been, you know, there's probably a knock-on effect from that. I mean, it is. I do actually take exception to some degree because those guys put everything into that comic. These are independent publishers. Yeah. This is not a network television show.
But you got to think that a lot of people who are going to download that torrent are going to be people who will never be able to buy it.
Yeah,
because they might be in another country or what have you, you know. I think the HBO guy, his comment was very relevant though, because basically his philosophy was, if you're downloading Game of Thrones and you're watching Game of Thrones and you're loving Game of Thrones, you're going to buy the Blu-ray when it comes out.
Mm. I've bought every season.
So have I. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. So if you do download it illegally...
But I also
pay
for Fox Cell.
Yeah, exactly. Let's not kid ourselves. If you are downloading something... whether it's a free-to-air television show, a movie, or a song from a torrent site, it is not a legal copy. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Now, that's not to say that there aren't legal torrents out there. There are. I'm talking about, you know, the stuff that's going from Pirate Bay.
There was actually an Australian film who did it really well. And it was actually clever. The Tunnel.
Yeah, The Tunnel did.
And I paid.
So did I.
I gave them donation for that to watch it, download it via torrent, so it was very fast to download.
Good movie, too.
And it was a good movie.
I also got my film frames. Because I donated to their campaign.
Beautiful.
It was great.
I like the Louis C.K. kind of model of, like, you know, you put it out for free, but with a donation option.
Yeah.
You know, well, and I donated $15 to get his...
Radiohead pioneered that back in when they put their album out.
Louis C.K. is also the one who goes, here's all of my concert films, and they cost $5. And basically, you pay $5, it's DRM-free, download it, and it's yours.
It's the same with comics model, Brian K. Vaughan and Marcos Martins, the panel syndicate. Yeah.
Which we both have Private Eye.
Yeah, yeah. Issue 7 has just come out this week, I think. So,
And Louis C.K. has made millions off of this.
And I pay somewhere between $3 and $5 an issue.
And you know what? Louis C.K. doesn't pay any cent to any other people that cut in.
No.
It's all his own.
So I say, you're absolutely right, Richard. The entire conversation could be summed up by one sentence you said before, which is we're just looking for a new model.
Yeah, we're looking for a new model.
It is time for the film and television industry to look at the music industry to see how they reinvented themselves.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because that's all it comes down to.
And in the case of the music industry, a big name came on board to provide a almost ubiquitous, legitimate download model.
Yes.
And a shop front to do that with.
Yeah.
So maybe movies just need the same thing.
Correct.
You know, and TV shows particularly.
Yeah. We need an iTunes. Well, we kind of do have an iTunes. We just need to be universal.
TV shows will be the CD the MP3 singles of the film age.
We also
need faster internet in Australia.
We also
need rentals in iTunes.
Like there are rentals in iTunes.
But to rent can you rent the TV shows in iTunes?
Not TV, movies.
Yeah, they were saying that you should be able to rent the episode for
the problem with that. The only problem with that philosophy is that an episode of a TV show is only like $2 anyway. It's a season.
Yeah, what would it be? $1.50?
Yeah, exactly. So your rentals are like $4 for a movie or $5 or whatever it is. So you sit there and go, it's already only $2.
But it has to be an attractive price too. When you look at it and it's like $54 for a season or something, you might think twice about buying the season subscription. But if it was $25 a season, I reckon you...
Which is what Game of Thrones was when
I reckon you triple your subscriptions for the season. I mean, you've got to make it so it's good for them. But it's that whole kind of Woolworths
and
philosophy.
We've said it before on this network. We actually said it on the old Geek Actually show. We're going to say it again right now because I actually heard somebody use this argument just last week, which is all we need is Netflix to come here. And I just want to make this very clear. Netflix opening in Australia will not solve the problem because Netflix is bound by all of the international distribution rules of everybody else.
Yeah.
If Netflix came to Australia, yes, that would be fantastic. We'd have this wonderful system. We already have one called QuickFlix. Netflix will not have the content that is on the American site.
So, yeah.
Canadian Netflix has been going for a couple of years now, and the Canadians still complain because they don't have the content that is
Once
on the American
again,
site.
We need a new model.
We need a new model because they are bound by the stuff. So what we would find on Netflix if they released in Australia is exactly what we would find on any other service right now.
What do you guys make
because
of
that?
Because
that is the stuff that is available.
Do you know, part of it is because getting back to our good mate who's currently in the lodge in Canberra.
Hmm.
A lot of it is how powerful certain network television and cable television networks are. Yeah, Murdoch. Well, that's Foxtel.
Yeah.
How powerful they are in the political ear.
Mm.
And their voice is the one that's strongest. So their interests are going to be primary.
Yeah.
And then so any model that would contradict those interests, we're not going to get the agreements to play that stuff here.
Correct.
So... That is basically the problem. The reason is that we are suffering because of the interests of big companies. That's why Choice said Foxtel's model is completely outdated.
Here's the funny thing. Even if Netflix came to Australia tomorrow, they wouldn't be carrying any of their original content because Orange is the New Black and House of Cards and... Arrested Development are actually all held by other distributors.
Let's put it out. We're really excited about the fact that next year Marvel are producing five new series exclusively to Netflix,
which will be licensed to other companies for Australian release.
Can I just ask?
Do you think
we're going to
wait for this?
Yeah.
I really want to know what you guys think about this because I don't believe this personally. So playing the devil's advocate, that there's a common argument amongst Americans. It seems to always be from America. Where it's like, these shows are made with our money for us, and if you guys don't get it, tough shit. What do you make of that argument? I get that argument a lot.
I mean,
it's like, it's our money, it's our product. If you don't see it, well, whatever.
To some extent, it's probably true. I mean, I think they're being... I mean, on a technical level, yeah, that's true. I think that cinema is certainly seen in the last few years that the bigger dollar is globally. Like when you look at Avengers took up 1.5 billion, the majority of that was international. Mm. I think it's short-minded of them to think that. Because
I don't think Americans do think like that. Quite
I don't
frankly.
Think Americans. I think
no.
It's,
I don't think they do either. That's why I'm playing the devil's advocate. I think
American distributors want to make as much money as they can off their product. Right?
Yeah. But the thing
but
is,
what they do is they can't distribute it everywhere in the world because everywhere in the world has its own legal system, its own copyright system, its own this, its own that. So what they do is exactly what Kevin Smith did. Kevin Smith sells Tusk to Sony Pictures in America. Mm-hmm. That he understands, right? When he releases it everywhere else in the world, he goes, I don't understand your releasing model. I don't understand how all that works. So he sells it to a local release,
a local distributor.
XYZ here in XYZ. And they will handle the distribution and release of that film in this country. Sony has no say in the way it is done. So when you actually go and buy your copy internationally from America through Amazon.com, technically, I mean, we have cross-platform importation rules now, but technically, you are breaching copyright because you are actually buying it. You're snatching out a sale out from under the local distributor and you're buying it from somebody else. You know what I mean? So you get into very gray areas of all of this copyright because you sit there and go, we buy stuff from Amazon.UK and we buy stuff from Amazon.com, but technically we're not supposed to.
Mm. I mean, I was watching an interview with Stephen Moffat, the Doctor Who showrunner recently. And he was talking about, because someone posed to him about the declining UK numbers of Doctor Who, that every year, you know, that the prognosticators of doom say, oh, it's just going to be the final season. It's like, the numbers aren't that bad. It's just that they're lower than the first season.
Yeah. Nothing can hold that high forever.
No. We're still talking about millions and millions of viewers. And we've got a new Doctor coming in, so we hope. And he goes, but also listen to, he said, we also look at this. We have 75 million viewers worldwide. He said, unlike the US... Yeah. We take those numbers into account as well. BBC Worldwide is massive. And 75 million viewers worldwide. The fact that they're actually Doctor Who, and this is how you plug a show. This is how you distribute a show internationally. Even ABC got it right here. They screen it on iView within an hour of its screening on BBC.
And then it's on a week later.
And then, that night, it'll be on ABC. It'll be on ABC TV. So if you want to wait to watch it in high def or whatever, you watch it that night. I've used a little bit low res here, but the fact that they're thinking about the international market from the get-go, that they're actually treating season 8 like it's a major film release. Mm-hmm. They're doing a world tour. I think it's like 5 continents in 13 days with Moffat, Capaldi and Jenna Coleman traveling around the world. That's how they're thinking about television now. Television now is being treated like it was a major film. So it damn well should be, because that's where the quality productions
Correct.
Are. So that's the new model. That's the model we're looking for. The one where they've got agreements with countries to screen their product, to bank off the anticipation that they've built around the world. That's how you do it. You know, if you're looking for a model, that's how you do it. And a beautiful thing is that ABC is free to every Australian.
And statistics show, that every film that has been released day and date internationally around the world has the lowest level of piracy. So when you look at a film that is literally released out within a week everywhere in the world in one massive release, people don't tend to pirate it because they're all getting it. You know, it's the films where we end up having to wait, like Orange is the New Black, where you end up having to wait.
Where they put the cans in a little rowboat.
And yeah, exactly. And row it out there. And then the local distributor says, oh, we'll just wait a while. You know, it'll fit within our schedule somewhere down the track. You know, they used to do this with Pixar films. If you remember when Pixar films first started releasing, we were getting them 6 months after the States.
Well, often with the kids' films, we still do. We did with the Lego Movie still.
Mm. Yeah, I remember,
but not as great a distance
because of the school holiday timing.
When we saw Up, it was out on torrent.
Well, they were releasing it. Because they were releasing Pixar films in September school holidays here, whereas they were coming out in May, June.
Yeah, for the summer in the US. Yeah.
So we were actually seeing these massive wait periods, and now they've closed that gap.
Disney's actually been quite under Bob Iger. Disney's been quite clever about release gaps, and in fact, we've seen with the Marvel films in the last few years that we've been getting those ahead of the US because they want to build international buzz before it even hits US.
And interestingly enough, one of the other things that Louis C.K. said was that the number of people downloading television and movie content in the States is actually percentage wise a lot lower than the rest of the world. He was saying that in America, the downloaders are still kind of The geeky
yeah,
people.
I think he called them weirdos.
The weirdos. Yeah, the little weirdos in the basement, where he said everywhere else in the world, it's mom and dad.
Women with prams, I think.
Yeah. So he's thinking mom and dad is downloading it everywhere else in the world. You know what I mean? And that's a very big difference. So delaying the release, we get a film a week early two weeks earlier than America. They're not going to get as many downloaders.
Put it
this
way. I was sitting in the kitchen at work the other day and we were talking about some shows, whatever. And then I said some comment like, of course, none of us endorse torrenting shows. Everybody laughed because everyone's aware of it. Everyone does it.
Yes.
It really is commonplace.
And it's talking about, across generations.
Of course.
You know, here. It is commonplace here.
Per capita, we're the highest downloading country in the world.
And there's a reason for that. I mean, I'm not saying we're entitled to it.
You know what else could cut it?
See the previous 30 minutes of the show.
Yeah.
You know what else could cut it down? If they just had put, like, instead of writing indefinite release, they could just put, like, a year from now. Yeah. Because even a year from now is better than maybe not at all.
Yeah. Well, no, okay, that's the thing. I mean, if you don't know when it's going to be released, you'd say, well, I may as well, GMC does not endorse torrenting or piracy of any kind.
Absolutely not. No. Never do it.
No.
Yeah. I'm not laughing, David. Yeah. Speaking of laughing, do we have time to talk about one more film?
One more film real quick. We are way over time, but we cannot not do this.
The clock only says 3 minutes.
That's because I reset it. We got a big old muzzy flying around the
screen. Oh, you're seeing things, David. I didn't see it. Let's have a look at this little film.
Hot plate.
Beanbag chair.
Hilarious shirt that signals we drink alcohol.
Are you two fucking around in school again? It's the same case. Do the same thing.
It's not exactly the same case because one of us got laid last night. We're talking missionary. We're talking missionary.
Missionary?
We're talking when I'm on top and she's on her back.
Damn! Get the fuck back to work.
We need an expert to consult.
I heard someone's bringing a shit ton of that stuff down to Puerto Mexico for spring break.
That's your lead, motherfucker.
I know, but we don't know who it is.
We don't know who it is.
That's you.
That doesn't sound anything like me.
It's not you.
Eric! Close your eyes and tell me who's talking right now.
Yeah.
That's Schmidt being a little bitch.
The film, in case you haven't guessed it, is 22 Jump Street, the sequel to previously on 21 Jump Street. Look, very, very, very quick summary of this film. Fucking awesome.
Absolutely. Genius.
It is a genius sequel. Yeah. It is a genius comedy. This is Lord and Miller doing what they do best, which is...
What a year for them, though. Lego and then this.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I mean, it is funny as hell. It subverts the genre while completely playing into it, And then
the whole joke is that everything is exactly
the
same
as the first one,
and the movie is exactly the same. Exactly, down to the jokes and everything. But the whole thing is that nobody is sure that it's the same. They feel that it's different. It's absolutely brilliant.
I have to go see this one. Actually, 21 Jump Street was one of those.
Just when you think about it, it's funny.
And then you get to the...
There's a lot of the sequel meta jokes too. Like
definitely stick through the credits and to the very end of the credits, because you want to talk meta all through those credits. It's brilliant. I mean, that's just... I've got nothing but nice things to say about this film.
Well, 21 Jump Street was a real surprise for me because the trailers didn't do much for me, but the film turned out to be really funny.
And hopeless name dropping. I got to interview both of those guys for 21 Jump Street, and God, they were fun.
Yeah.
And you can see that the relationship they have carries over onto the screen as well. I mean, that's just... I mean, go and see it. If you haven't seen it already and you're thinking of seeing it, what is wrong with you? Just go out and see it.
It's a masterpiece of comedy. It's like, in my opinion. I've seen it twice already.
Look, I do love Lord and Miller. What are you rating it?
Oh, I'm giving it... 22 stars.
let's just say it breaks through the ceiling.
If you can't see right now, David Longo is making a rather explicit fisting motion, which you'll get if you see the film. So
I take it you're highly recommending this.
I think Longo's going to fist you if you don't go and see it. Okay, look,
we'll say there's...
He will eat someone's fist.
There are a shit ton of surprises that are pretty strong that actually, in both screenings I saw already, got gasps.
Yeah.
Like for how like... unexpected they were, like several times.
And, I gotta go see this.
I actually got a lot of clapping last night.
Yeah,
when I watched it again.
We got clapping it out too. And I
just the jokes, which you never get in a normal.
There's two
audience.
Films I have to see. I have to see that, and I have to see Edge of Tomorrow. So
I still haven't seen Edge of Tomorrow. So
I really want to see Edge of Tomorrow.
I think we all have a movie together.
Haven't you seen it either?
No, I was going to. But,
Boys' night.
Boys' night.
But see, that shows you how much I love 22 Jump Street. We picked that again as opposed to
Sorry, the Mozzie's back.
David's freaking out. So
David's using the force.
I think it's time to go.
Wait, what's the name for the episode?
This episode is Fists of Fury.
From a certain point of view.
Yes, from a certain point
from
of view.
From a certain point of view.
Is the name of this episode.
All right, we're going to go out today, just so you, to explain the piece of music that we're going out on. The Buffy Marathon continues. We will be doing the special soon. Rachel, you're still going to come on and do these with us.
My marathons collided last week when I was watching...
Your worlds collided.
My worlds collided. I was watching School Reunion, the episode of Doctor Who, which doesn't, not only has the beautiful late greats Liz Sladen as Sarah Jane in it, but has Anthony Head, who plays Giles in Buffy. And it's just like, it's what, seeing Giles in Doctor Who all of a sudden. Like, oh,
that was one of my favourite episodes.
That's a brilliant episode.
That's a really good episode. So
that's right.
I thought because I've been so heavily invested in Buffy, I'm now into season 4 and started Angel at the same time. So we're really kicking into it now, that I thought we would just revisit something we haven't come up to in the marathon yet, but a track from the Buffy musical, which is coming up, which is coming up in season 7, which I can't wait to listen to.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant episode. So I thought we'd go out with this. That's all for this week. I don't think we have anything else to add. We'll close the clubhouse. And I'm David McVeigh.
I'm Richard Gray.
And David Lungo. From a certain point of view.
And this is Buffy Once More With Feeling.
Why'd you run away? Don't you like my style? Why don't you come and play? I guarantee a great big smile. I come from the imagination, and I'm here strictly by your invocation. So what do you say? Why don't we dance a while? I'm the hottest swing, I'm the twist and shy.